be here. It's great to be here. So we'll see. I'm going to present, I think, some provocative positions. So I'm happy to have comments either along the way or afterwards as well. Please challenge me if you don't think I'm being fair. So my claim here is that evidence for systematic phonics is the evidence for systematic phonics is a lot weaker than you might think, and that really we need to, because of that, we really should take seriously looking at different approaches to teaching instruction. I mean, I would argue from the very beginning, but even some of the ideas I think I'm going to present would be relevant to older children as well. Okay, so that's the. But just to start with, so what is systematic phonics? I mean, you probably are all aware of this. It's just the key claim that initial reading instruction should teach grapheme phoneme correspondences in a systematic manner before focusing on the meaning of words. And both by meaning, like whole language and balanced literacy would involve teaching words in the context of meaningful sentences, for instance. But phonics people would say, no, that's not good enough because you're not teaching the grapheme phoneme correspondences with sufficient focus and in a systematic manner. Or another alternative would be, well, we should teach, and something I'll be talking a bit about, is some kind of morphological instruction, telling children that words are composed of meaningful parts. And typically, opponents of phonics instruction say, so no, maybe, but later, it's too complicated. So teach phonics first. So any kind of component, reading in a meaningful context or the meaningful parts of words, is rejected by a systematic phonics approach. You have to do phonics, grapheme, phoneme correspondences first by themselves, and later maybe introduce new things, or definitely introduce new things, but not first. Okay, that's, and I think there's kind of two reasons why people are so convinced that phonics is the right way to go. So convinced that it's legally required. Which one, the claim is the empirical research overwhelmingly supports this claim. And people will cite individual studies, but more important, various meta-analyses that have been reported. And it seems to support the claim that systematic phonics is better than alternatives, including whole language balanced literacy, where phonics people present themselves as very dedicated to following the science of reading, and therefore science supports systematic phonics. That's the claim. And then there's another argument that people make, is that not only is the evidence, but the theory, the empirical evidence and the theory support it. There's a theory that seems quite compelling to most people, which is English is an alphabetic writing system in which letters represent sounds. So the obvious implication of that theoretical framework is that, well, why don't teach children the logic of the system? Teach letters, sound, and grapheme phoneme correspondences. So there seems to be both theoretical and empirical evidence that support this approach. And like I say, it's been probably one of the most, that has led to changes in instruction by the legal requirement in the UK, and others. It's a really profound influence on practice in schools. And I'm going to argue today it's all wrong. I'm going to say that empirical evidence does not support systematic phonics compared to whole language and balanced literacy. In fact, I want to be clear from the start, I'm not arguing for whole language and balanced literacy either. I think they're equally bad. So I don't want people to be interpreting me as a whole language person. I'm not. I'm saying it's no better than that. Equally bad. And I'm also going to argue that despite all intuition, English is not an alphabetic writing system. Letters do not just represent letters, sounds. The letters in English is designed which letters represent both phonology and meaning. I'll describe what I mean by that as well. It's a mischaracterization to describe English as an alphabetic system. What linguists would call it a morphophonemic system, a system that co-letters have two roles, not just one, which is kind of the claim of the alphabetic principle. And so, because there's no evidence, nor on the level of theory or data, on the basis of systematic phonics, I think we at least have to consider the idea that there might be some alternative approaches. And I'm going to very briefly, if I have time, outline a different approach, what I call structured word inquiry, which teaches grapheme phoneme correspondences as part of the system. We need to teach grapheme phoneme correspondences, but we have to teach more than that, because that's what the writing system in English does. It does more than that. Okay, so that'll be, I think the focus of my talk is just criticizing the evidence for phonics, because I think my experience has been, I can't even communicate my structured word inquiry approach to anybody because everyone's so committed that phonics is right, and it's like I'm endangering children's lives by suggesting anything else. So I've kind of given up almost, to some extent, talking too much about structured word inquiry, but at least before, I kind of highlighted the fact that we better be not so convinced that phonics is the way to go. Okay. So, very briefly, I'll talk about the empirical evidence in favor of phonics. I'll briefly review the theoretical case for systematic phonics, and then briefly outline a different approach. That's the outline I want to talk about. Okay, so the empirical case for systematic phonics, I think, is flawed in two basic fundamental ways. One is that the results from many meta-analyses, in the abstract, they claim there's some kind of bottom-line conclusion in the abstract, that the data supports systematic phonics, and that gets picked up. When you look at the actual tables and the actual results, it's a mischaracterization of what was found. That the authors themselves are often mischaracterizing their own findings, and then they get amplified through citations. And what we find is very little correspondence between what was found and what was claimed in the literature. Second point is that, even more important, and most of the authors in medicine analysis don't appreciate this themselves, I don't think, is they're studying and even a test the claim that they're making. And I'll describe what that means. It's a bit confusing, but I think it's a really important point. So people are really not even testing the hypothesis. Systematic phonics is better than whole language, for example. They think they are, they make that claim, but they're actually logically not doing it. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Okay, so I'm going to go through points one and two in turn. First, just the pure mischaracterization. Let's not worry about the logical flaw in the study. Let's just kind of take, for the moment, the data as it is. Kind of go through it. The most famous of all studies is the National Reading Panel, published in 2000. It's been cited over 20,000 times. It's just a phenomenally important report. And is this mouse? Can you see my hand? Can you see that? Yeah. So here's the bottom line number. So there's a measured effect size, the size of the overall effect of phonics compared to control conditions, according to the National Reading Panel, is something called 0.41. And just to give you an intuitive sense, this doesn't relate to this particular study, but this is giving you a description of what 0.41 effect means. So this would be the group of children or in whatever study you do before intervention, and then the lighter thing is after the intervention. So that's a benefit of 0.41. And that's, a reasonable size effect in education research. If that was the outcome, that would be indeed reasons to celebrate this as a good approach. And that's the bottom line finding, what they found. But sometimes it's worth to know that's what they found. And based on this finding, the main conclusion is systematic phonics instruction to help children to learn to read better than all forms of control group instruction, including whole language. So those are the kinds of claims you'll find in the abstract of the National Reading Panel, and cited thousands and thousands of times, consistently in support of systematic phonics. Okay, but let's kind of go through this a little bit in turn. The first thing to note is that the 0.41 is an overall effect, which is fine. If you look at some of the other measures, spelling, reading text, comprehension, the effects are smaller. So, the biggest effects are reading aloud regular words, but some of these other important effects are reduced compared to the overall effect. It's still significant, so that's okay. The other thing to note is that the effect is reduced following a delay of 4 to 12 months. So the overall effect goes from 0.41 to 0.27, which is still significant. But the effect is getting cut fairly substantially over the course of a very short time. And they didn't even assess these other effects, the important effects like comprehension and reading text. Those things aren't even assessed, but presumably they would also be reduced. So we don't really actually have an assessment in the National Reading Panel of the effect of comprehension, reading text, and spelling words after a 4-month delay. But presumably, the effects will be small, and they may not even be significant. You don't know, because they don't report that part. Here's a striking fact that people don't ever seem to highlight, is that struggling readers of above grade 1, whose intelligence was below average or not assessed, did not benefit from in the National Reading Panel. The overall effect of 0.41 is actually, if you take a population of that subset of kids who have below average intelligence did not benefit from systematic phonics. So children in, roughly, presumably, at the minimum, half the children who are struggling in year one will have, by definition, below below average intelligence. In fact, because of comorbidity, probably higher than half the children will be struggling. But anyway, so that's a striking finding, that half the children whose intelligence is below or not even assessed got no effect on the main effect. Forgetting about whether these smaller effects like comprehension, forgetting about the longevity of these effects. Okay. So what you should conclude from the most famous study of all time, well, really, endlessly cited as strong evidence for phonics. Really, if you just took it as on his face, in 5 minutes or so, I'll explain why you shouldn't do this. But let's just let's accept there aren't flaws in the study. Let's just take it the way it is. The right conclusion would be something like this is my own reading. Systematic phonics provides a small short-term benefit on word reading, spelling, and comprehension, but these effects are substantially reduced following delay of 4 to 12 months, with no demonstration of long-term benefits on spelling, reading text, or comprehension, and no benefit for struggling readers with low average intelligence. That is a fair description of the National Reading Panel results, I think. I mean, if someone can disagree with me, I don't know, but I haven't changed anything so far. I'm just reporting what they found. It's not the way it's described. Okay, that's the National Reading Panel, most cited. In fact, what about, it's 20 years old now, right? What about, there's been many, many dozens of meta-analyses subsequent to the National Reading Panel. In fact, they're all showing weaker effects. And we'll look at this now, briefly. So there's one paper by Torgerson in 2006, Torgerson and colleagues. And what they did is analyzed a subset of the National Reading Panel studies. Because in fact, the National Reading Panel included a whole range of studies and analyses. The best forms of studies are what are called randomized control trials, where you have children randomly assigned to one condition or not. That's really the gold standard if you do a study. And most studies in the National Reading Panel didn't have that attribute. So he said, well, let's just take a subset of those studies that are the best studies and analyze those effects. That's what they did in 2006. And they found no effect of spelling, no effect of comprehension. Now, they did report effect of word reading accuracy, and they cite that and highlight in the abstract. People cite this paper many times as evidence that phonics works. But there's a very odd thing about that conclusion in their own abstract, which is they themselves excluded a flawed study that had just one study by Umbach, which had an effect size of 2.69. There's a design flaw in the study, and to understand, an effect size of 0.269 is a massive effect, an absurd effect. I mean, an effect size of 3, just on statistical terms, means that every single member of the phonics group would be above average compared to the control group. I mean, it's like a massive effect. You know, the difference between height of men and women is about 1.4. I mean, it's a massive effect. It's implausible, and furthermore, it's flawed, if you look at the design. And furthermore, the authors themselves realized it was flawed and removed it from their subsequent kind of the sub-analysis from the study. And when you do that, which you should do, the effect on word reading accuracy is also not significant. So no effect on any measure was carried out when they measured the subset of National Reading Panel studies that used the right types of design. There's no effect on any measure that they assessed. Although that paper is cited many, many dozens, if not hundreds of times in support of strong support of systematic phonics. Paper by MacArthur assessed the efficacy of systematic phonics. And I'm covering all the main, I'm not ignoring a single meta-analysis here that substantially supports systematic phonics. MacArthur et al. In 2012. Assessed the efficacy of systematic phonics with children, adolescents, and adults with reading difficulties. They found no effect on non-word reading fluency, no effect on spelling, no effect on reading comprehension, no effect on reading fluency. They did get an effect on non-word naming, which is one of the big things. We'll come to this in the phonics screening check in a moment, but they got an effect there. They did have an effect, and this is cited endlessly as in support of systematic phonics, on word reading accuracy. It should be noted, though, and again, the same is that the effect hinged on one author who published two studies that got very large effects. And here's a characterization. So this Betty Ann Levy ran a study where children got one-on-one phonics instruction for 20 days to teach 48 words. So an extensive one-on-one instruction on 48 particular words. And the control group got no instruction at all. They got math instruction. And they found a benefit for the kids that got one-on-one in phonics instruction on these 48 words compared to kids that got no instruction at all. Now, I mean, that's not a fair, I mean, it could just simply be extensive practice on those words help. Could have been any form of instruction might perhaps benefit. So there's no evidence that this is a phonics effect. This is an effect of studying a narrow set of words over 20 times, one-on-one, if you exclude those studies, those two studies, now the effect on word reading accuracy is lower significantly. So this study doesn't really find any compelling evidence for systematic phonics on word reading, nor on any other measure by the Roman phonics. Paper more recently cited as evidence that systematic phonics works for children and adolescents with reading difficulties, and they highlight the fact that what they find is they compare all these different things, phonics, phonemic awareness training, reading fluency training, even like things like color overlays, and various kinds of odd measures that they've used, and they highlight that the only effect that was significant was phonics. So was the effect significant? No, phonics, yes, evidence for phonics. That's the claim, that's what they say, that's what the people cite this paper as showing. But if you look at it, it's actually an absurd conclusion, because these are the effect size. The effect size of phonics was 0.32. The effect size of phonemic awareness was 0.28, reading fluency training 0.3, auditory training 0.39, cover overlays 0.32, reading comprehension 0.18. The only reason why phonics was significant and all these other ones were not is the number of studies that were carried out using these different procedures. And as a basic finding of statistics, if you run a few studies, it's hard to get a significant effect. I mean, really, what you need to do, statistically speaking, is show that this is larger than these effects. That's called an interaction. That's, in order to support the conclusion that phonics is better than alternatives, you'd have to show an interaction. They don't even assess that. All they say is that phonics is significant, the others are not, therefore phonics, and everybody cites it as evidence for phonics. There's no evidence at all. Literally none evidence at all that the study supports the conclusion that the authors made. A more recent study by Simon and Sugate assessed the short and long-term impacts of phonemic awareness, fluency, phonics, comprehension intervention on pre-reading, reading comprehension, so a bunch of measures. What they find is similar effects for all these different measures at immediate, and at the long delay, oddly, I wouldn't take this necessarily as strong evidence for this claim, but the worst outcome in the long-term effect was phonics. Every other measure got a larger effect than phonics. So I don't want to trust that phonics is worse than anything else, but it's certainly not by any evidence that long-term effects of phonics are beneficial. Okay. Nevertheless, the people cite the study, including the authors themselves, as evidence for phonics. But if Sugate is maybe the one person out there that seems to be pointing out that my analysis doesn't seem to support phonics. Okay, so that's bad enough, I think, that if you just take these systematic analysis, meta-analyses that are cited thousands of times in support of systematic phonics, which is the basis of why systematic phonics is legally required in English, it's bad enough there, but there's an even more fundamental problem with all these studies. That is, they didn't even test the hypothesis that they're claiming. So this takes a moment to explain. It's not too complicated, but if it's not clear, just put up your hand and I'll try to make it clear. What do I mean they didn't even test? I mean, you saw in the abstract of the National Reading Panel that their claim that provides evidence for systematic phonics over whole language. That's in the abstract of the National Reading Panel. So what do I mean they didn't even test that hypothesis? You have to understand the difference between what's called systematic and non-systematic phonics. So whole language and balanced literacy include what's called non-systematic phonics as opposed to systematic phonics. That is, graphing, phoneme, correspondence are generally taught, but they're not the focus of attention. It's, you know, when a kid is struggling and saying, you're reading words in a context, you can't guess it, you know, you ask the child to sound it out, but it's not systematic. You know, particular graphemes maybe the topic of graphing, phoneme, correspondence, maybe not. There's no systematic structure, but people do get some graphing, phoneme, correspondences along the way. That's non-systematic. Where graphing, phoneme, where systematic phonics is, you focus, you have a sequence of orders, or we're going to do this graphing, these set of graphemes today, and these set of graphemes tomorrow, systematically covering them all. That would be systematic phonics. Now, the important thing to note is that in the UK and in the States, people always teach at least unsystematic phonics. So here's in the UK, Her Majesty Inspectorate in 1990 observed 470 classes of over 2,000 children, and they wrote, quote, phonics skills were taught almost universally and usually to beneficial effect. Or they wrote, successful teachers of reading in the majority of schools used a mix of methods, each reinforcing each other as the children's reading developed. So they had non-systematic phonics, you're using multiple methods together. So the relevant question, when you're motivating systematic phonics is legally required, the question isn't whether systematic phonics is better than nothing. The question is, it better than that current practice before? You know, things like balanced literacy and whole language and the kind of non-systematic instruction. That's the question. If you want to introduce a policy of systematic phonics, it has to be better than what was before non-systematic phonics. But that's not what the National Reading Panel did. What they did is they compared systematic phonics to two conditions. One group of studies that included unsystematic phonics, like whole language and balanced literacy, and another set of studies that have been published that included no phonics instruction, like sight word instruction. So they combine, they have a control condition, which is a combination of these two separate conditions. And they claim they got a 0.41 advantage of systematic phonics compared to an amalgam of conditions 1 and 2. Okay. So that's what they found. So they didn't actually test the question, is systematic phonics better than condition 1? Not, whole language balanced literacy. That's what they claim they test, but that's not actually the condition that they have in the comparison. So they didn't actually test. I've discovered there's one point where they get a smaller significant effect. There's one condition, one part where they actually do. So I missed the subheading. But nevertheless, the effect is small, it's not as large, and none of the other methods will get to it. So fundamentally, they did make a systematic comparison between these things. And so there's a paper that's entirely ignored by someone named Camelli. He had a series of papers, one in 2003, 2005, 2006, where he reanalyzed the National Reading Panel studies. But he made a relevant comparison. I'm going to compare the effects of systematic phonics compared to those studies in the National Reading Panel that had non-systematic phonics. That is, things that would be like whole language and balanced literacy. And said, what's the effect of systematic phonics compared to non-systematic phonics? And the effect of 0.41 goes to 0.12. The main effect, and it's not even significant. So if you compare the whole, you do the right comparison, and that's, and of course the effects would be smaller for comprehension, reading, and spelling, it'll be even smaller yet again for a delay. So the relevant comparison of systematic phonics compared to unsystematic phonics, that's the question that we should motivate the legal requirement to teach systematic phonics. If you do that comparison, the National Reading Panel finds no significant effect. But it gets worse, because every single meta-analysis that's claimed to support systematic phonics does the same design choice that the National Reading Panel did, which is they compare systematic phonics to a group of studies that mix systematic phonics and non-phonics. So every study they didn't get hardly any significant effects anyways, but to the extent that they got a small effects, it's confounded by the fact that they had the wrong control condition. So I would claim that the laboratory studies provides no evidence for the evidence of systematic phonics. And then people will say, yeah, but Jeff, what about the fantastic results of the, for instance, phonics screening check? You'll get things like, it's gone from 2012 to 2017, massive improvements from 58% to 81%, and this is an extraordinary success, and it's listed in the newspapers, and this is a really big, important demonstration of systematic phonics working really well. But when you look at it, the introduction of systematic phonics has led to improvements in the system that phonics screening check, but there's no evidence it improved anything else. So here's a for instance. The SATs are the children to write. So you can measure, reading and writing and math and science, and here's a phonics check. And this is listed from 2006 to 2018, and you kind of have these are the measured performances over the years. 2012 is the year that the phonics screening check was introduced, and then you can measure how people did on these various SAT scores. Now, there's an oddity, but not entirely clear. Everything started vaguely increasing before the phonics check, and they continued to increase after the phonics check. But so the beginning of the increases precedes the phonics check, and the increases are no larger for reading than math or anything else. So there's no evidence that despite these massive increases in the phonics screening check results, it did translate in any better performance in reading measures compared to anything else. That's for key stage one results. The same is true of key stage two. So the first year of children filling, this vertical line refers to how children were performing before the screening check was introduced and after. There's this kind of drop between 2015 and 2016 because it changed the test and made it more difficult, so everything went down. But there's, again, no evidence whatsoever that children who were exposed to the phonics screening check back in 2006 and 2007 showed any particular benefit in reading or writing compared to anything else. So the phonics screening check results improved dramatically. The SAT scores didn't change in particular compared to one skill versus another. Well, by the way, I don't know if you all have heard of this, there's a PIRLS test, Progress on International Reading Literacy Study. It's kind of a study that assesses comprehension reading skills for children. It's an international thing. And just about a year ago, there was talk all over about a demonstration that systematic phonics in schools has really benefited English children. And the finding is based on the fact that, well, look at this great performance that's changed. We've gone from children in 2006 scored 15th, 2011, they got, there's like lots of different countries involved, 11th and then 8th, year after year they're improving. These are the scores, 539, 552, 559. The numbers are getting better. And so Sir Jim Rose, the author of the Rose Report, who is the person who got, the Rose Report is the report that led to the legal requirement to introduce systematic phonics in state schools in England. When he sees these results, he says, the spectacular success of England shown in the last PIRLS data provides further evidence in support of systematic synthetic. He's a big advocate of synthetic phonics, a particular form of phonics, in which we actually draw the phonics, so it would be synthetic. So he takes these data, and you can find endless people citing evidence yet again that that systematic phonics is actually working, improving on the international league tables on reading comprehension. But there are a few things that people don't fail to mention in this one. First thing to note is that England did really well in 2001, before screening. So in 2001 they came in third. So this, in fact, the pattern results is all due to a blip in 2006. They are roughly steady along as a score: 553, 552, 559. Fairly flat performance over the last, with one blip in 2006. That blip is the basis for which people make claims that systematic phonics has worked in the results of these international competitions. Furthermore, these 2016 scores actually mixed state and private schools. If you separate them out, the performance of state schools didn't actually increase. So they ended up in 11th place, again, from 2011 to 2016. So, and private schools don't actually have a screening phonics check mandatory. They don't have it, but they do how they want. So, furthermore, Northern Ireland does better than England in 2011 and 2016, and they don't have a phonics screening check. They don't have mandatory systematic phonics either. I mean, they do some. They do it like we did before, where we have a mixture of methods, including non-systematic phonics. I mean, I don't know a lot about the Northern Ireland, but they do not mandate systematic phonics, and they do not have the phonics screening check, and they outperformed England the last two tests. So this is hardly evidence of the spectacular success demonstrating that. I just think, and it's so striking. People make such strong claims. It's one of the strongest pieces of evidence of all social sciences and reading that systematic phonics works. And it's just a house of cards. Honestly, it's a house of cards. There's no evidence whatsoever that systematic phonics works. Okay, but what about the empirical evidence? There's no empirical evidence. But what about the theory? Because it makes a lot of sense that the writing you should teach graphing phonics. Because the claim is, it follows the alphabetic principle. According to the alphabetic principles, letters and combinations of letters, graphemes, are the symbols used to represent speech sounds, phonemes. So if letters represent sounds, it makes theoretical sense to first teach grapheme phoneme correspondences, because phonics is simply teaching children the logic of the writing system. Okay, it certainly seems compelling. But there's one obvious thing that you might start is wondering about the alphabetic principle, is that English, unlike Spanish or Italian, has lots of exceptions, right? Well over 20% of words in children's books, in children's books are irregular, according to graphing phoneme correspondences. It gets worse from going from sounds to spellings. So David Crystal, a famous linguist, points out that in all of English, about only half of the words can be spelled uniquely based on their sound. I mean, there's too many different, equally plausible ways to spell a word. Only 50% are actually. So if English is an alphabetic system where letters represent sounds a pretty bloody rubbish system. It works pretty well in other systems. So one possibility, that's the answer, is, well, we just have a rubbish system. We should have spelling reform. We should do things like that. That's the common interpretation of the effects. But there's another hypothesis that's been long known amongst linguists, which is English is not an alphabetic system. It's what's called a morphophonemic system, in which letters have two roles. Letters represent sounds, S and D, that's right, but they also are designed to represent meaning through one way is morphology. Another way I won't talk about is etymology. But letters are actually coding meaning. So letters, you know, are the building blocks of English words, and they have two functions, sound and meaning. And let me just kind of give you some brief illustrations of this. So one is what I'll call the homophone principle, which is the observation that almost all homophones are words, different words that sound the same. 90% or 80%, I don't know the number, the vast majority are spelled differently. The question is, if the writing system is a system that represents sounds, then homophones should be spelled the same. But they're consistently, overwhelmingly spelled differently. So what does that mean? Why would you consistently spell two things that sound the same differently? And the answer is because the different spellings are indicating they mean different things. They're different words. I mean, if you ask a child, why do you think homophones are spelled differently? A child will say, well, they're different words, they mean different things. If you ask a teacher, they'll say, wow, English is crazy. But you know, kids know it. They learn not to know this obvious fact that spellings are designed in part to represent meaning. And here's another one that I'll call the morphological principle. The observation that the spelling system actually prioritizes the consistent spelling of morphemes over the consistent spelling of phonemes. So let me give you an example, just two examples, but this is general. So this is a nice way, I think, and I'm kind of working on some studies now, highlighting, because I think it's a really important way to display information, what I call morphological matrices. So I have we have a matrix where the base here at, and we have prefixes and suffixes here. And you can build a whole morphological family in at, reaction, reactive, reactively, actor. You can build a whole family of related words by adding affixes, prefixes and suffixes to a base. That's great. But the other thing you can notice is that the ACT in at is spelled entirely consistently, even when the pronunciation changes. So we have action, we have act and action. There's no action. So why, if you're phonics, you spell A-C-S, an S-H in there. That would be, why would you spell it A-C-S-H-I-L-Y? Why would you spell it A-C-T? It's a weird spelling. Well, because the spelling of act is consistent across the entire morphological family. The writing system is designed to represent morphemes in a consistent way, even when the phonology changes. We don't change the spelling because the writing system has a design principle that meanings are spelled highly consistently. Even when the phonemes change, you'll say, you know what? I'm going to stick with meaning. I'm not going to stick with sound. Another simple example is like does. Everyone says does, but kid with D-U-Z. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, actually, there's a reason. It's D-O-E-X, so that's erase. Something you have to remember. It's a rote memory. It's one of those things. It's just crazy. It's not crazy. You have a base, D-O, and you have all these affixes, E-S-I-N-G-N-E. D-O is spelled consistently. It's do, does, doing, done. The vowels change in pronunciation. The spelling is consistent. It happens all the time. That is the way that the English writing system works. There's other things called etymology and so forth that we'll talk about later if you want. But so we have the so-called alphabetic principle cited tens of thousands of times or over 10,000 times in the literature as evidence for phonics, but no one ever says the homophone principle, which specifically shows that spellings are actually designed to mark differences in meaning, even when the sounds are the same. The morphological principle never cited. So the design of the writing system is not an alphabetic system. So I would say neither data nor theory support systematic phonics. Where am I, by the way? Okay. So it raises a question, I think. So why not teach children all the regulators that exist in the writing system, the phonological and semantic, rather than just a subset? Because phonics seems to have you know, when you think, once you know that the writing system has multiple regularities, you realize that phonics instruction is committed to this claim that I think we only want to teach a subset of regularities, not all regularities. It's possible, that's right. Logically, it's possible. I just pointed out there's not much empirical evidence for it, but logically, it's possible. But another plausible hypothesis is we should focus on all the regularities. Why would you not? Why would you avoid meaningful regularity? One thing we know from psychology is memory is best when you can study something in a meaningful, organized manner. So it seems to me you need some real motivation to explain. If you have some empirical support that it's wise to ignore these regularities, fine. But in the absence of any evidence that really works, it seems to me we should be considering seriously the hypothesis that children should start focusing on not only phonology, but meaning as well. Might be particularly true with dyslexics, because dyslexics do tend to have phonological deficits. So rather than kind of over and over again focusing on a phonological deficit, why don't you do, yeah, you have to not ignore these phonological features, these are an important part of the writing system, but also help them with their strength, their meaning, the logical structure. I mean, why not use both sets of skills, especially in that part for dyslexics, who might be struggling with sounds, but they're not as often struggling with their meaning and organization of things, so why not allow them to exploit those skills to help them? So, just very briefly, so one of the tools that we use in structured work where are these morphological matrices, and part of the thing is that, for one thing, it's really a great way to build a vocabulary. Because rather than a bunch of words that just, you know, I don't know, food items, or I don't know, mean words that relate to vacation, we can build a meaningful set of words and say, you know, unhealthy, healthy, heal, a whole collection of words. All that share spelling, all that share, or most of them transparently related to meaning, some are not, and sometimes when you think about it, you can see why they're related. If you understand, you look for relations, you can see the relationships between things. You know, so heal, health, please, pleasure, pleasurable, please, I mean, a whole range of words, and the next one, ease and disease. You wouldn't even necessarily think about the relationship between ease and disease, but if you think about it, disease is a state of unease. So you know, you start seeing interesting relationships between a morphological family that you wouldn't necessarily think about. What a great way to organize both spelling, because the spelling of the morphemes is going to be consistent. There are a few rules you need to learn, like you have to, if you have a kind of a vowel suffix and you have a single-sided E, you have to drop the E, so you can't just add them. There are a small set of rules, but they're highly regular sets of rules that you can tell children how to combine these things. Spelling is consistent, there's a meaningful organization amongst these words. What a great way, potentially, to study both improve vocabulary and improve spelling. Again, with spelling, you can kind of break down, not only morphological family, you can kind of specifically break down words into their parts. And kind of, these are called word sums, where you can kind of say H-E-A-L plus T-H is health, and H-E-A-L plus I-N-G is healing. You can kind of build around words, highlighting the actual morphological structure of these words by themselves and in relationship with your morphological family. You can tell each grapheme phoneme corresponds, but you can do it in the context of your morphological family. So for instance, I might say, you know, because one of the paradoxes of the writing system is that when we have multiple different, a given letter or grapheme corresponds to multiple phonemes. Oh, English is crazy. Well, if you study grapheme phoneme correspondences in the morphological context, you say, you know, it's not crazy. It's a feature. It's not a bug. It's a feature of the system. So if I want to spell, I got healing. I got health and heal. They both have the same base. And then the EA in the case of heal, that A, I'll teach the child that EA can pronounce the long E in heal. EA in grapheme digraph can pronounce the phoneme E. But I can also, but you know what? In health, it's a short E sound. H-E-A in healing, in that E-A, that same letter string, it has a different sound. In one case, it's a long vowel, in one case, it's a short vowel. And it's not that it's crazy. It allows me to represent the meaning of heal spelled in a consistent way across time, in context. So I would teach an E, an O, and you know, I can teach grapheme phoneme correspondences. I'm not suggesting that's not important. You teach them in a way in which it's meaningfully organized. It makes sense of which choices of grapheme phoneme, why there are multiple grapheme phoneme correspondences. It's more interesting in the context of a meaningful collection of words and so forth. So it just seems to me it's not I mean, constantly I'm criticized for, oh, graphing phoneme correspondence are important. You can't deny that, Jack, and I don't deny that. That's part of, but I would suggest that maybe teaching vocabulary and spelling and graphing phoneme correspondence, in which you give a meaningful context for all these things, might be better. I'm willing to acknowledge there's not a lot of data. There's some data out there that does seem to provide some support for this, but there's not a lot of evidence for this. What there is not, but there's not a lot of evidence for systematic phonics, where you say, I don't care about vocabulary, I don't care about meaning, I'm going to specifically focus down on graphing phoneme correspondences outside of any morphological context, and then later I'll do these other things. There's no evidence for that, as far as I can see. So you might as well start looking elsewhere. This seems to be a plausible way. But it's hard, it's even hard to run studies in this. And with kids, they won't let you, you know, you'd be violating the natural curriculum if you did this in year one. So, you know, you've tried a little bit of stuff with one of these. So I won't, you got a link, if you want, I'm happy to have conversations, but you know, there's a short video. Sometimes it's hard to imagine what these structured word inquiry lessons are like, so you have in your package you should have this link. So you can go to my papers on my website, I have links later, you can find a lot more stuff of papers of mine that are not behind paywalls. You can see the links to other videos, but here's a nice video of very young children learning about a morphological family brain. And if you want, if you have time, I can play it for you now, but chance to talk. And the other thing I just want to mention is that if you're, I'm doing a study where it'd be kind of useful to get some more information about what the teachers in schools know about the morphological structure of written words. So if you have any capacity to kind of help distribute this, I mean, I want you to fill it out, because you might, at this point, you've already learned a bit more than I expect most teachers do, but, you know, I'm trying to distribute this around their ethics approval and so forth. So if anybody's willing to an opportunity to give it to a head teacher, distribute to her staff or his staff, I'd be very appreciative of that. So conclusions: little or no evidence that to support the claim that systematic phonics is better than whole language or balanced literacy. I think that so-called reading words is a draw. They both are equally effective or equally ineffective. The theoretical motivation for systematic phonics is flawed. Spellings represent both meaning and sounds. Given the failure of systematic phonics in whole language or balanced literacy, I think you should at least consider the hypothesis that maybe we should teach all the regulators the writing system. And I'm trying to argue that structured word inquiry, which uses morphological matrices and word sums and tries to make sense of the writing system, teaches graphing, phoneme correspondence, and morphology, and we haven't talked about etymology from the start, might be a useful approach. So, again, I have some references you can find on my website.